Chapter 19. Peace. As the morning flowed into the day, the Feagles were settling down to a feast of drinking, eating, and more drinking, and telling tales, some of which were bigger than the Feagles themselves. Rob Anybody looked at Tiffany and said, "Weel, noo, mistress, the field is oor ain. Come on doon into the mound. Jeanie would love to see your sonsie face." And Tiffany slid into the mound, which seemed bigger than when she had seen it last. The great hall was full of leaping figures and flying kilts as the Feagles danced their reels. Feagles loved a reel at any time. The slap of boot on earth was like a challenge to the universe. Then, of course, every Feagle wanted every other Feagle to know how well they had conducted themselves against the elves. Every single one of the younger Feagles was wanting Tiffany, their Hag of the Hills, to know how brave he had been. As they gathered around, she said, "What are your names, boys?" Wee Callum, a little bit tongue-tied, said, "I'm Callum, mistress." "Pleased to meet you," said Tiffany. "Aye, mistress, and this is my brother, Callum."
"Two of you," she said. "Isn't that difficult?"
"Och, no. I know who I am, and he knows who he is, and so does our other brother, Callum."
"And how did you like the fighting?"
"Och, aye, we smited them weel enough. The big man is a hard taskmaster, ye ken. He sees to it that we can handle the mace and the spear and the axe, and of course the feats. And when the three of us got one of they scunners doon on the ground, that's what our boots were for."
The old boys were marching down the lane, and they had a new song now, one that began, "Our soul, a soldier's life for me." And with each verse and each step, they were standing straighter and stronger. Our soul, a soldier's life for me. For king, and constabulary re. We weaken the enemies. For they don't want it up 'em, they don't want it up 'em, don't want it up and over. And those who had wives kissed them. The wives hadn't seen their husbands so frisky for years. And then they set off down to the pub to tell their mates all about it. With a pint resting happily in his hand, Captain Makepeace sat on a milestone outside the pub and declaimed, "People of Lanka, we happy few, we extremely elderly few, have scorned the horrible elves. They say that old men forget, but we won't. Not by a long chalk. We thought we were old, but today we found we were still young." And then it was time for another round of drinks. And another, with everyone wanting to stand the old boys around until standing was no longer an option. And still the shout went up, was there time for another flagon? As the moon rose to herald the hours of darkness the following day, there was Geoffrey on his broomstick, which was once again hovering in the air. Tiffany shouted over at him, "I still don't know how you can do that."
"No idea, Tiffany. Can't everyone," he replied. "Let's ask, for here comes everyone."
And, indeed, now the other witches were arriving, led by Nanny Og and Magrat. It was time to look to the future once again, a future not now filled with elves. But the present? Well, the present was filled with the chattering and gossiping of witches, as the tales of the two battles were shared. Rob Anybody had set fire to a beacon, and Tiffany watched the last witches circling until there was space, then coming into land one after the other. Not one left her stick hovering, though. It seemed as if Geoffrey was the only one who could make his broomstick do that.
"I wonder if they're going to sneak back," said Nanny Og, after a while. "You can't trust old Harry. He was trying to charm you, Tiff, by what you say."
"I know, but I am not charmed," said Tiffany. "Not since the one elf who tried to be a good elf is now dead. We marked the spot where we bedded her, Nanny, you know. And if they do try to come back, we will be ready for them. We can put iron on the stones here on the chalk, like you've laid swarf all around the dancers in Lanka." Her voice hardened. "There is iron in my soul now, and iron in dealing with them should they dare ever to return."
"Well," said Magrat the Queen, "we've knocked them down so often now that I think he means what he said. I think it's unlikely they will come back."
"I'll drink to them not coming back, then," said Nanny Og.
"Ladies, while we are gathered," said Tiffany, "I want to talk to you about Geoffrey. He has been a great strength to us, and I know you all saw how he made the old men of Lanka into a fighting force. He is clever and cunning and careful. He knows how to listen, and he has a kind of magic."
"That's true," said Nanny. "Everybody likes Geoffrey. Somehow he seems to understand everybody. Believe me, even some of them old girls would be quite happy to have him deal with their aches and pains and worse. He calms people. You all know that. He is calm itself, and the calm stays even when he is left. He doesn't just jolly people up. After he is gone, they are somehow much better, as if life was still worth having. People like that, like Geoffrey, well, they make the world, well, better.
I totally agree with you, said Mrs. Earwig.
You agrees with me?
Said Nanny Ogg, almost speechless.
Yes, my dear, I do.
And Tiffany thought, at last we will have peace.
Thank you, Geoffrey, she said under her breath.
Now we are all here, she said aloud, I must tell you that I can't manage Granny's steading. I'm not going to sleep in Granny's bed any more, because I'm not her.
Nanny grinned. I wondered if you'd do that, Tiff. You has to be your own woman after all.
My roots are in the chalk, and the chalk is my strength, Tiffany continued. My bones will be part of those hills, just like those of my Granny Aching.
There was a murmur from the witches. They had all heard of Granny Aching by now.
And I have some very good boots, too. Just as I cannot sleep in Granny Weatherwax's bed, I cannot wear her boots either.
Nanny chuckled. I'll collect them when I'm next up at the cottage, Tiff. I knows Esme's boots. Knows a young witch they'll do very nicely for.
Talking of young witches, Tiffany added, Miss Tick has found me some girls with potential. May I send them up to the mountains to begin their training? I will have need of help in the chalk in the future.
The witches were nodding, of course, for it was the way it was done. The young girls, Nancy Upright and Becky Pardon, would spend time with the senior witches and learn the beginning of their trade.
Tiffany took a deep breath. And what I suggest is that Geoffrey be allowed to look after Granny Weatherwax's cottage and steading for me, she said, looking at Nanny Ogg as she said that, and getting a wink in return. She glanced at Mrs. Earwig and was surprised to see her nod and say, He's a very nice, decent young man, and we have seen him at work, and now we live in the tame of the railways, so perhaps we should change our ways. Yes, I believe Mr. Geoffrey should take care of Granny's, Tiffany's, steading in Lanka. He's no witch, but he's certainly much more than the usual sort of backhouse boy. And Tiffany could see Mrs. Earwig's mind working, and she felt certain that the next time she saw the witch, she would have a lad somewhere around her establishment.
Out loud, Nanny said, What did you call him, Tiff? A calm weaver? Shall we leave it at that for now?
But Magrat wanted her say too.
Ference heard of what he did for the old men, she said. He believes he should have a reward, and I think I know exactly what would suit.
And thus, a few weeks later, Lord Swivel was most surprised to see his third son riding proudly up his long, long drive, a herald at his side, Sean Ogg, in another of his royal duties, and a pennant with the royal insignia of Lanka fluttering in the breeze. The same insignia was also on a velvet coat over the flanks of Mephistopheles.
"May I announce his royal ambassadorship, Geoffrey Swivel," proclaimed the herald, breaking into a few notes on the trumpet he held.
Geoffrey's mother sobbed with delight, while his father, a man on whom no calm weaving would ever work, boiled inside with fury as he had to bow to the son he had treated as a nobody. But no one argued with the power of a crown. There was a purpose to this visit, though, after the usual bowing, scraping, and general knee-bending any royal emissary took as his due. Geoffrey grinned around at the assembled company and said, "Father, I have exciting news. Those of us in the country may oft feel neglected by those in the big city, but let me assure you this is not the case. There have, in fact, been important developments just recently in the field of chicken runs. Some young people in Ankh-Morpork, young people whose parents have the power to indulge their wishes," and he tapped his nose with a finger to show that he expected his father to know these important parents, "feel that it may no longer be necessary to hunt sly old Mr. Reynard to protect our chickens." He beamed. "They have come up with a new chicken run which is totally impervious to foxes, and you, father, are the lucky, lucky landowner who has been chosen to test this new design."
As his father spluttered, and his brother Hugh shouted, "Hurrah!" for no particular reason except that it felt like someone should, Geoffrey looked around. He could see his mother's face,
Normally, she looked like someone the world had trodden on so many times that it was almost an invitation to tread on her yourself, but now she stood tall, her chin high.
"Harold, our son has worked wonders, and here is a king honouring him and treating him as a friend," she said proudly. "Don't you look at me like that, Harold, for today I have spoken, and the Queen of Lanka has invited me to come and visit her," she added with satisfaction.
There was a bleat from Mephistopheles,
and as Geoffrey's father turned to stamp away, the goat turned its back and aimed a square set of devilish hooves right onto Lord Swivel's rump, followed by a raucous fart that almost, but not quite, covered up the noise of the man falling flat on his face.
"A most usefully offensive goat," Geoffrey murmured to MacTavish, who'd come to stand by his side. The old stable lad looked around.
"And one your father cannot touch," he said with a wink. "Not with that fancy coat on its back," he sniffed. "My word, though, Mephistopheles isn't easy on the nose. He whiffs even worse than I remember."
"Yes," said Geoffrey, "but he can climb trees and use a privy, even count. He's a strange creature. He can turn a dark day into a clear one. Look into his eyes sometime."
And MacTavish looked, and then hastily looked away.